Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 80 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm Bairam Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango, and with me is Jared Kimber, as always, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And we've actually got or ended up with a fair few off-the-field cricket news topics. And I remember yesterday, I was like, nothing happened this week. We don't have anything to talk about. And here we are with five things to talk about. We'll start off, Jared, with Pakistan's new coaching ensemble. Are you ready for this?
I mean, never.
I'm giving you a trigger warning. But anyway, Azhar Mahmood has assumed the role of head coach for the New Zealand T20I series. It's a stopgap solution. He's probably an interim coach. And, you know, someone who has worked as bowling coach of this team in the past and was their bowling coach when Pakistan won the 2017 Champions Trophy. He also won the PSL recently with Islamabad United. He was assistant coach over there. And he's, you know, working with Surrey, champions in England, and the Oval Invincibles who won the 100. So he's had a lot of success in the recent past. Azhar could be slotted in as the bowling coach, you know, in the future as well. Once, I suppose, Gary Kirsten assumes his role. And that's the rumor. That's what the rumor mill says. But, you know, not the worst appointment, I'd say, this one.
Interesting one, because Surrey is one of the most prestigious and well-paid positions in cricket. But Alex Stewart is stepping down, and obviously him and Azhar Mahmood probably have a relationship going back a long time. So I wonder if it's as simple as that, where he just went, you know, they might move in a new direction and I'm being offered this really good spot. But we all know that it is, you know, if you're being offered a Pakistani coaching job, then you really need to worry about what you're going to do in 4 months' time to find a new job. So there is that.
I mean,
I was a bit shocked, I think, based on that. But, you know, I obviously live close to the Oval. I know Gareth Batty and, you know a lot of the Oval guys. They all talk really highly of him, especially when it comes to his skills coaching sort of thing. So I think it'd be really, really interesting. His wife is quite prominent on social media at times. I wonder if she might need to gear down, as just because it's tough. It's, you know, I'm not saying she's wrong to use social media the way she does, but she's about to enter a different world of social media, is my guess. Good luck to her as well. Good luck to the whole family.
Yeah. And I mean, I like Azhar. I think he's a student of the game and he's had success with Pakistan in the past. So maybe, you know, she's had some experiences that she can, you know, go back to. And I don't see that being as much of an issue. But I do fear that, you know, they're just going to discard Azhar maybe once they sign Gary Kirsten, who, by the way, Mohammed Yusuf, who is both a selector and the batting coach of this team now. So the batters are going to be shitting bricks in the nets, because if they don't play well, he might not select them. It's a very unhealthy environment, or not a nurturing environment, at least. Yeah. It's definitely not. And they've done this once with Misbah when he was made everything. You know, Misbah was the be-all and end-all of Pakistan cricket. Yeah.
That went great, though, and they started winning lots. No, it didn't go great.
No, it did not. And I mean, I was always against that as well. I just don't know why Yusuf, who was just with the under-19s team and had his stint as batting coach with Pakistan and was now a selector, felt the need to come in as batting coach, because you're going to make those batters tense, especially the new guys in the team, because they're not going to play freely in the nets, let alone a game, because they'll fear for their spot. And it's not the right way to do things, in my opinion.
No, I mean, you've nailed that. I've got nothing to add there.
He did have a Freudian slip where he said that, hey, Gary Kirsten is our head coach, and there's been no news of such sort. So I don't know if he got the memo from the PCB or not, but now it will be extremely embarrassing for the PCB if Gary rejects the job, which is obviously on the cards always with the Pakistan Cricket Board, because who would want to take that job, which has the worst job security in the world? Do you remember how a couple of shows, or maybe last Uncovered, I mentioned Pakistan's new data analyst?
Yes.
A friend of the chairman is a politician who's worked in forestry and fisheries. Remember that?
Yeah, of course. I'm never going to forget that fact.
This guy came to a presser and he said that, hey, I'm an engineer by degree and lots of data analysts are. And I have worked with data in strategy and finance. My entire career has revolved around data, so I am fit for this job. And when I read that, I wanted to bang my head against a concrete wall, because If we wanted a finance guy, we'd go to Goldman Sachs. We'd go to Wall Street. You have no cricket data analysis experience. Like, I have data experience as well. I've worked in corporate. I have an engineering degree. I'm not fit for the role. I even work with you guys, right, at good areas. I understand true strike rates and true economy. Yet, I don't think I'm fit for the role. How does this dude, bro, think that he's going to, you know, fit right in?
Why is he giving a press conference if he's a team's analyst? Yeah.
Why?
That's my first thought. Right? I know that's probably not where you wanted me to go. My first thought was, what? Why is he doing that? I don't understand the press conference. From what I've just heard of what he said there, that means there are 200,000 people in the world qualified to be the analyst of the Pakistani cricket team, right?
Basically.
So yeah. That doesn't make any sense at all. It's probably going to end really, really poorly. Being an analyst of a cricket team is a really, really tricky position. It requires a knowledge of how cricketers and coaches think. It requires a knowledge of how data works.
And how to look at data, right? Like, it requires a specific lens. You can't just look at raw data and strike rates and averages and just, you know, figure stuff out over
you,
there.
You can have a person like that in your team, but that doesn't mean anything, because all you're looking at there, if you, the analysts who get ignored the most are the ones who go, look at this is an outlier, you should do something about this. And the team's like, well, okay, what are we supposed to do with that? You need the ability to communicate, to bring it across. You need to understand their language, and I don't mean Urdu or English or or something like that. I mean legitimately cricket language. You need to understand their educational points and where they come from and how they've never sat down and looked at any of this stuff before. You need to understand why there is an outlier on your screen. You need to interrogate all of that, right? And you need to probably put your head down and do the work. And it sounds like I just don't understand why he's doing a press conference. Yeah. Now, maybe they just thought that there was so much bad press he had to do it. But can you tell me another data analyst in world cricket who's ever done a press conference? I've never done a press conference, and I'm fucking more famous than him.
Yeah.
Right? Nathan Lehman? I can't think of Nathan. Pasana, Nathan Lehman, Freddie Wild. Those are the three probably most famous analysts, unless I'm forgetting anyone else. Obviously.
Ben Jones.
Yeah, Ben. I mean, Ben less so than those guys. I mean, they've done international cricket, but Ben. I can't think of any of those people who've done a press conference. Talking to the press is different, right? If it's talking to the press and someone requests to interview, and I've interviewed Nathan and others before, but if it's a press conference, I don't know. It just seems the whole thing, that their whole vibe is off.
Yeah. I mean, you were already receiving a lot of flack from, you know, all corners, because no one was buying this. Everyone looked at your Twitter and you were just retweeting the chairman even before he was chairman. So you're clearly his guy. Why would you come to a press conference and make this worse for you? And you can't convince us by saying that you worked in strategy and finance that you're fit for the role. Like, this is just, that alone makes me convinced that he's not fit for the role.
And I know there are people that have worked in doing analysis right across different sports that have backgrounds like that, right? Muhammad Khan is a perfect example of someone who came in and has worked in cricket as a professional and brings a lot of, a similar business background and everything else. But he's also completely steeped in the game, right? And he looks at things from a different perspective. Just saying that you have an engineering degree or whatever it may be, it's like, well, that's not what this is. It is far beyond that. And look, I don't know. Good luck to him. I hope he does really well. I mean, I do. I don't want people to fail, but it's just the whole thing just seems nuts to me.
Yeah, it does. It is very bizarre. And I mean, it is a specialized role. It deserves that respect at this point. Like, we're in 2024. This is not 2001. So that's what pisses me off. And I'm sure it does. The same for a lot of other Pakistanis. Syed Ajmal is the spin bowling coach. Fine, not too perturbed with that. Science is the man. All of that good stuff. And Wahab Riaz, who Jared, you remember those good old days when I wrote a piece after he retired, and then you wrote a piece on when he retired? That was a long time ago. A lot has happened since then. He has worn multiple hats since retiring from cricket. He was first made the caretaker sports minister of Punjab, which is a province, And then whilst he had that job, he was made chief selector of the PCB. Mm. So those are two big jobs that he was doing in tandem. And now he's not a selector or not the chief selector anymore. He's just a regular selector, but also the senior team manager in this team. And he claims that this is not the first time selectors have traveled with the team. Well, Wahab, if you go and watch a game, that's different. If you're in the dressing room, that's weird, right? And also, the only the other selectors that I can think of are Misbah and maybe Inzi. So you're just talking about Pakistanis at this point. Maybe a New Zealander here and there.
Bailey?
I'm not sure. Maybe Bailey.
Traditionally, when you went on the road, the captain, vice captain, sometimes a senior member were the selection committee. And obviously coaches have been. I think George Bailey has changed things quite dramatically because he is the general manager of Australian cricket. Really, even if he's called chief selector, they should change his title and make him work properly. Bales probably doesn't want to do that, but that is what they should do with him. And he does throwdowns and he is involved. The difference is that I think there's a level of professionalism and I'm a little bit biased because we're friends, right? So take that. But I've watched him from a distance with the Australian team. He's doing the right things and he's trying to get it in the right position. This feels like these guys just want gigs and they want multiple gigs and they want power. And that's the issue that we have. And the fact that every week we find out they've got a new position or a new job, right, tells you that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Like, I mean, it could not be any more clear that they don't know what they're doing. The way this has been drip fed, the chairman's nonsense, this data analyst stuff, this I'm the captain, I'm the coach. The captain said this. Now I'm the coach. Now I'm the selector. Now I'm the chairman's selectors. Now I'm not actually. Now I'm the team manager. Now I'm two different roles at once. It's quite clear that they're making this up as they go along. So that is very different from George Bailey going, I want to be chairman of selectors, but this is how I want to do it. This is how I think the job should be done. And I'm going to present to Cricket Australia and say, this is how I want the system to go. And this is how I think you guys were failing before. And this is how I think Pat Howard's role wasn't perfect. And the chairman and selectors roles beforehand weren't perfect. That's Rob Key did a similar thing. Andrew Strauss did a similar thing. You know, we've seen this, you know, in New Zealand as well. What Pakistan is doing is giving people fancy titles and then giving them double fancy titles and then just going, we'll see how it all goes.
Yeah, he said that he's going to be looking after the workloads of the fast bowlers and rotation. I mean,
that's good.
Is that what a senior manager does though?
No.
That's not.
I don't really know what a senior manager is. I'm not sure I've ever heard of that role in cricket before, I'm okay with. Teams, sports make up new roles all the time. I'm okay with that. But it just feels like they gave him another role so they could either give him more money or give him more power. And it's like, okay, again, that's the wrong way to do this.
I mean, there is a regular team manager. Is he his boss? And also, just the fact that I know how Pakistani culture works and there's a lot of strong arming and there's a lot of muscle flexing that, oh, look, I have the power. I have the authority. That's what I fear over here. Plus, like, Wahab Riaz loves to wear all of these hats, but only wore one jacket.
Hey, I like that.
Anyway, let's move on. Enough on Pakistan. Let's move to Australia now. Mitch Marsh has torn his hamstring. It is a minor tear. From what we hear,
is it a tear? Because Cricket Australia said it was a strain.
Oh, did they? Because I read tear.
Because if it's a tear, he's out of the World Cup. And I thought he was not out of the World Cup.
He's not. He's gone back to Australia for rehab. And I mean, they are going to wrap him up in cotton wool because this is the guy who Cricket Australia had earmarked as the person who will assume captaincy duties in this T20 World Cup. Yeah. And he's also a key batter, right? If you go back to the triumphant campaign of 2021, Mitch Marsh at first drop was one of the key ingredients of that World Cup win. So losing him would be massive and it would be a major blow to Australia. And yeah, I mean, if it is just a strain, then we don't have much to worry about. But if it is a tear, then this is bad.
If it's a tear, he's out of the World Cup, I would say. I'm just cricket.com.au is, you know, it's not an independent news source, but it is Cricket Australia. I would assume they would know and they would, because I could see a lot of other people are writing. I'm just going through the Google now. Mm. A lot of people have written hamstring injury, but a lot of people in Australia have written hamstring strain. I have seen people write tear as well. You're right. But I think that might be people who don't know the difference.
Fair enough.
If it's a hamstring tear, I could not see how he could play in that World Cup, and he certainly won't be able to bowl or move in the field all that well. If it's a strain, then makes sense for him to come back, get it ready for the World Cup, and he might still not be 100% as the tournament begins, but it shouldn't be a massive issue for him. But it's also not what you want when you've just decided to, essentially hand over the team to him. And he's always been, he's a big dude. Like he does get, a lot of soft tissue injuries. He was an Aussie rules footballer as well. And if I'm not mistaken, he had hamstring issues back then as well. So it's probably something he's always had. I can kind of see how that might be a thing for him. But yeah, I wouldn't worry yet, because I think if he was out of the World Cup, we would know.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, they manage this correctly. And I think he probably shouldn't play the remainder of the IPL. It just doesn't make sense.
To be honest, I'm not sure if you'd be able to anyway, but where Delhi currently are, I think it makes more sense for everyone not to do that. And the thing with a strain is they can hang around. I don't know if a strain becomes a tear, but it could be much worse of a strain at the very least, right? And so, if it's not right, it's not right. Get some treatment at home and hopefully you're ready by the start of the World Cup. Might be different if, he was in one of the top four or five teams. And then you'd say, look, go home, get your treatment. But is it okay if we make the finals for you to whip back over? At the moment, that doesn't look like it's going to be an issue with Delhi.
Yeah, and punter won't risk Mitch Marsh because he is an Australian at heart and he'd want Australia to win that World Cup. He makes no mistake of mentioning his Australian-ness, which, I'm fine with. Anyway, there is more IPL off-the-field news, but we'll take a short break at this point. You guys are watching Uncovered with Behram and Jared, and we'll be back after this ad.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Welcome back to the Uncovered podcast. You guys are with Behram and Jared. And next up, we've got a pretty heartwarming story. That of Vijayakant Vyaskant. I think I've got that pronunciation right. He's gotten his big break in the IPL. He's been snapped up by the Sunrisers Hyderabad as their Hasaranga replacement. And Vijayakant is also a right-arm leg break bowler, much like Hasaranga. And according to Estelle, he's one of the few real products of the LPL where he actually did play alongside Hasaranga in two title-winning seasons for Jaffna. He's also born and raised in Jaffna, and he is the first ever professional cricketer to hail from the region. And that's a region which has been ravaged by civil war in the not-so-distant past. So a call-up to the national team might still be a fair distance away, but this is still huge for a 22-year-old, who, by the way, has already featured for MI Emirates. So it's not like he's completely new to the franchise T20 circuit.
No, look, it's great news. So I wrote a piece about a netballer, Tarjini, who's a 6'11" netballer from Jaffna and that area. And she was saying to me that how athletic people were in that area. And I think Estelle might have told me this before, or Fernando, or maybe it was even one of my wife's family members once, said a similar thing as well, which is, that there is a ridiculous amount of sporting talent there and it hasn't come out. Right. And you know how I feel. I hate talent being wasted. I hate people not getting opportunities that could change their lives. And look, this is a really exciting one. Who knows if he'll get a game, because they're kind of working now. We were desperate for them to have Hasaranga, but partly that was for his little bit of batting as well. This is a slightly different kind of situation, but it's great for them to have a leg spinner on the bench. Maybe they have him as the super sub. In some games, and when they can bring him in. People keep getting upset because I say super sub, not impact sub. It's like it was super sub for ages, and it's just become impact sub. And we don't even call it impact sub in all the different leagues that try it. They can put him on the bench and then whip him in for a particular game if they need to, or a good matchup, or whatever that may be. I know nothing more about him than what. I think I've seen a couple of Jaffna games. So I think I've seen him bowl. Didn't see him bowl for the Emirates, but I do think I've seen him bowl a little bit. And from what I remember, he looks sound. But yeah, if he plays two or three games, you know, just to give him a go, I think that's a good way to ease him in, as we've been talking about this. A lot of young players or inexperienced players being thrown into this IPL. At least he has played in a franchise league and, you know, has had some success at home. So hopefully that works for them if they need another spinner.
Yeah, he was leading the attack for Jaffna when Hasaranga got injured. So that's something to note. And, you know, to your earlier point where you said that there are a lot of, you know, athletic people from that region. When I was talking to Estelle about this, she said that cricket in Sri Lanka is centralized in the Western province. So the talented players from the north and the east, they had no freedom to get to the cricket center. And I mean, the rebel governed areas had a part to play in that as well. But basically, so many talented players from that region just could never pursue cricket professionally. So in that regard, I think this is a great stepping stone and we get to see even more players from Jaffna.
I don't think Sri Lanka's got anywhere near to tapping into the talent on that island. The whole East Coast is almost never mentioned at all. South has probably got, over the last few years, since the freeway came into Colombo, has probably changed a little bit. It's still not particularly easy to get between Kandy and Colombo. And Kandy's a bit of a... Kandy's like a big village. Like, it's... You know, especially Colombo's a proper major international city. And Kandy's a bit like a a big village in the mountains. And that's before you get to the north and some of the other regional spots. So I do think there is a talent issue, identification issue. And there is that whole idea that you have to move to the right areas to be successful. If you've only got 20 or 25 million people, you kind of need to work that out. And that's why franchise leagues are so important, because franchise leagues actually go out looking for the talent in a way that domestic cricket doesn't have to, because domestic cricket's role doesn't really matter if your local domestic team wins or loses, right? Whereas a franchise team has a lot of external pressures on them. And so these things really, really matter. And we've seen it right across the cricket world, and these sorts of things. So this is a great story,
Yeah, an absolute trailblazing story, and we wish Vijay Kanth all the success. Also, recently, Andrew Fidel Fernando, he posted a tweet in which he said that, you know, Mathisha Pathirana, who he also thinks is the fastest bowler Sri Lanka ever produced, he hails from, you know, the Sinhalese part of central Sri Lanka, and he is playing for Chennai and lighting up, you know, the stadiums in Tamil Nadu, which is the state which Chennai belongs in. So, sport cannot, you know, mend the wounds of yesteryear, but they can give you good stories like that, and they can kind of provide some healing in the form of bringing people together. And I think that's a big takeaway over here.
No, definitely. There's no doubt of that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Last a bit of IPL news, which is Hardik Pandya's woes. And I'm not talking about his captaincy decisions. We already spoke about that on Overthrows. I'm talking about the body language. Now, obviously, we know that he was booed incessantly at Ahmedabad, the Narendra Modi Stadium. And when I say booed, I actually mean abused. Because booing is fine. I feel like booing is the right of every fan. But when you swear at a player en masse, that is, I feel, is problematic. And I don't think he's been sworn at the Wankhede, but he has been booed quite consistently. It has become a bit of a theme. People have picked up on it. And I was really intrigued by what KP had to say about it. Because he said that...
Which KP?
When he looks at... Kevin Peterson.
Only reason I say that is because Karan Pollard also talked about him this week.
I'll listen to you then what he had to say. But what KP said was that he can look at Hardik Pandya and just judging by his body language, he knows he's not in a good mental space. Because even I've noticed this. KP brought up how he's always smiling or overly smiling in all of the media interactions. Which is kind of feels like not normal. And, you know, when I look at him in the dugout, he seems a bit tense. And I think it's getting to him. And KP said that he was someone who was in the firing line a lot. Kevin Peterson. Of course, we all know that. And it, you know, impacted him as well. And of course, it would at some level. But do you think that this is the primary reason why Hardik Pandya is failing grandly at Mumbai in the second stint?
Which bit? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Like both as captain and as player.
But what are you saying? Because he's got bad body language, he's failing.
No, because he's getting all of this criticism and jeers from the crowd.
Before. So
that's
yeah.
So KP is wrong.
he came in and he bowled the first over, And I think he was trying to make a statement already. Since then, he's barely bowled. And when he did bowl in the last game, he shouldn't have bowled. He's not seeing the ball particularly well when he bats. And he's been very frantic with his captaincy. Some good and some bad, some terrible as well. I just don't think he's confident. I don't think he's comfortable in his own body at the moment. I don't think he's playing the way he wants to play. And then you get booed. And, you know, you get flack. It was a weird situation to come into because, you know, Rohit is Mr. Mumbai. And to, you know, he was sort of parachuted back in. I know he is a Mumbai player himself. But, yeah, so I think that's all an issue. But, no, I think if he was playing good, I don't think him. Like, if he was playing good to begin with, the booing would never have happened. And if he wasn't being booed, I still think he would be having trouble with his form because he doesn't look quite right to me.
Yeah, I don't think he's fully fit, especially, you know, judging by his bowling. Because, you know, when Hardik Pandya is at full tilt, he's a very good bowler.
He looked like you bowling the other day, and I've never even seen you bowl.
You could say that. But just on the smiling too much bit, because that's what KP pointed out. And I also kind of noticed that whenever I see Hardik Pandya talking to the media, he's just too happy. It's a wide smile. I feel like that does have something to do with the booing and the jeering.
I mean,
he's kind of maybe trying to show that
I don't want to have a go at you and KP, but I mean, what are we doing here? We're talking about how much he smiles at press conferences. He's bowling like shit and he's batting like shit, and he hasn't worked out a way to captain a team that was really happy with his previous captaincy. You know, sometimes, I mean, every sports fan in the world and every sports media person in the world has talked about body language. How about fucking not bowling shit and making some runs, right? And getting your batting order and your bowling order correct on an occasion. I don't give a shit if he smiles at press conferences or, you know, or he's touchy at press conferences. Owen Morgan was always touchy at press conferences, even when England were winning, right? And I don't remember ever writing up going, you know, that was an issue. He's just, Owen Morgan gets Owen Morgan doesn't like to be questioned. Owen Morgan likes to do what he does, and you have to trust that he knows what he's doing because he's done the work. And, you know, Hardik Pandya is smiling. I don't know how to respond to that, right? Because I don't give a shit if he's smiling. If he was bowling at 90 miles an hour, 88 miles an hour, and doing his job and coming in and whacking sixes, he'd be fine. He can smile out his arsehole then, as far as I'm concerned. It's just, I understand why you're asking it, but I don't know how to answer it, I suppose is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, this was this made the cut for the show when I didn't have any topics for Uncovered.
I think it's an interesting one because I think there are a lot of fans, and obviously KP's talked about it, but do you understand my point? There was a great comedy article written a couple of years ago about politicians, right? And it was writing about politicians the same way that sports fans and sports media talk about their athletes. And it was a whole thing about commenting about how people went between rooms, right? Like he went from this cabinet room to this office and this is how he walked. And for a moment he sat there and scratched. And it really did change the way I thought about sports writing. And, you know, it's probably one of the reasons I went into data a little bit more. That's not to say those things don't sometimes mean anything, right? But it's a bit like you and I've talked about this a lot. Someone loses a family member and the next thing they want to do is play a game of cricket. And everyone's like, oh, great, good on them. But actually, it might just be that's how they grieve. And the other person's like, I'm going to need 3 months off. I'm really not in a state and I'm not ready to go. You know, there's a big thing with police officers where they make a lot of assumptions when it comes to partners in murders based on how upset they are when they find out that their partner has done. Completely oblivious to the fact that shock hits people in many different ways, right? And so everything I've just said, if he was playing good cricket, who gives a shit if he's smiling at a press conference, right? You only care because he's losing and getting booed. He might have been like that at previous press conferences and no one was watching.
Yeah, I mean, this is coming from the guy who said that 100 meter sixes should be 12s. But anyway, we have to move on. We'll move on to the last topic of the day in this Uncovered episode. And it's the sad one, the somber note on which we'll end today. Derek Underwood, slow left armer for England, played 86 test matches and took 297 wickets. In test cricket, is the leading spin bowling wicket taker for England in the format. And he took all of those wickets at 26 or under 26 apiece, which is quite remarkable. He passed away at the age of 78. And while I haven't watched him bowl, Jared, what I do know about Derek Underwood is that he needs to thank Alan Knott for a lot of those wickets. And also that he had a long run-up and was fairly faster in the air. So what can you add to that?
Yeah, I mean, in an era where we had players like Bishan Bedi, if you go back and watch Bishan Bedi, he doesn't look like anything like modern cricket. And Dedley was probably someone who would fit in. In fact, I think he'd be a fantastic modern day bowler probably in India and the UAE specifically. Whereas, weirdly enough, he was quite adept at changing the way he bowled. And when he went to Asia, he actually bowled a lot slower originally, but he also had success in Australia. He's interesting because he's probably the last great wet wicket bowler that we had. And that, during his career, that became less and less important, because by the end of his career, wickets were covered. And so we no longer had that anymore. And so that bowler, we don't even talk about wet wicket bowlers anymore. Like, it's not a phrase that you or I would ever use. And really in our lifetime, right? You know, it's that, you know, 1982, Dedley retires, and that's pretty much it. Look, he had some controversy in his career at times. Obviously, he played in South Africa with the Rebel in the Rebel cricket, so that was quite a big issue. You know, from that point of view, purely as a bowler, I think he's the best spinner that England have ever had. You know, him, Laker, and Swan all have various claims on that title in different eras, slightly overlapping in some cases. But I do think that Underwood was absolutely magnificent. But he was a very, very bowler of his time. But weirdly enough, cricket has changed so much that probably the way he bowls so quick and accurate at the stumps, if you want to compare him to anyone, he probably, if he was bowling now, would be like a shorter version of Akshar Patel. Would be my guess if he played today. That's how he would bowl. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. There's a great story, and I can't remember the test match. I want to say it's in the late 70s, and they were trying to beat Australia in a test match, and the crowd got involved with getting the pitch ready, getting the outfield ready, because it was wet, because they knew that if he got out there, he would absolutely steamroll Australia. And I believe he did do that. He was just unplayable on those kinds of wickets. Imagine now what we would be thinking if an England spinner took almost 300 wickets at 25 or 26 or whatever his average was. Like, we would be shocked, I think is the first way of putting that right. Like, we would be absolutely shocked if he came through and we saw something like that from him. So, yeah.
I mean, when I saw the record, I was a bit shocked. But quickly, tell me if you had to rank the top three English spinners post Laker, and Graham Swan is probably number one, would Underwood be number two?
Yeah, I don't know. The thing I would say about Underwood was he was brilliant in Australia, and Swan was a holding bowler in Australia. So the only place that Underwood really struggled was the West Indies. And I think I'm just trying to look it up now. It was only from a handful of tests. He didn't take a lot of wickets in Pakistan, but he was fine in Pakistan. He took 54 wickets at 26 in India, and had a record of 27 away and 24 at home. So I've talked about him being a wicket bowler. In England, he was, but everywhere else, he was something else. I think he was more versatile than Swan. I wonder if Swan's best delivery wasn't better than him. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you got one guy who's a wet wicket bowler, and that's his era. And then you've got another guy who's a DRS bowler, and that's his era. And so, it sort of depends on where you go. But I think you would pick Swan as a cricketer because of his slogging with his batting and his fielding. I think that's probably fair. But I think if you're going a specialist bowler, I think Underwood probably still takes him. And as I said, I think he's quite variable in the kinds of ways that he could bowl, whereas I don't think Swan was quite that level of player in those days. In his career, I should say.
That is quite fascinating. Anyway, last super chat of the day, Parth right winger with his third super chat overall. Between overthrows and uncovered. He says, I don't like Hardik's obsession with his price, but the fans are treating him like butt. How do bigger sports leagues handle such situations? Do fans handle it differently? Early 2000s, Parth, you would know because you're a right winger. I'm assuming that's a football pun. But one of the best footballers that Portugal has ever produced, Luis Figo, he used to play for Barcelona and he moved to arch rivals Real Madrid. And that is the El Clasico, as you might know. Mm. And he was on the corner post, about to take a corner, and he was, or someone tossed a severed pig's head at him. So yeah, this is not the worst thing in the world that's happening to Hardik Pandya. I'm not for the abuse, but the boos are part and parcel of the sport, or any sport.
I remember the Australian team getting really upset when Warner and Smith came back in England. And like, I was told this by like so many people. They were like, I can't believe you're not writing about the boos. And I was like, they got caught tampering with the ball. And this is the first time they've played England since. They're going to get booed. I remember Michael Clarke got booed Melbourne and Sydney before he became captain. He was so unpopular. I was at a Surrey game when Rory Hamilton-Brown was booed by his home fans. So it's not the first time I've seen this in cricket. As I said, I think cricket is becoming, and this is not just cricket, but cricket, you know, specifically at, right at the moment in front of my face, is becoming a lot more personality driven. And I think because of that, you have a situation where a lot of people are Rohit fans rather than Mumbai fans, and a lot of people are Mumbai fans. Hardik has come in and been dropped into this side. Clearly, there is fractions from within the group, from what I'm hearing. And then on top of it, they're not winning. And the captain's not playing well. And he's making, you know, weird decisions. But I'll tell you the same thing I told a friend of mine in Australia when he said that, that's it, Warner's done. Australians will never love him anymore. I said, the next time Warner makes an iconic innings in Australia, the crowd will go absolutely nuts and they will forget every single thing he's done. And the next time he made that big score against Pakistan, I sent my mate all the articles, one after the other. Fans do this all the time, right? They turn on their players and then they get better. Different fan bases do it in different ways. Some fan bases never turn on their players, and that's the annoying thing, right? But we see this sort of stuff all the time. Truth is, none of this would be a problem if they weren't losing. Right, it basically comes down to that. At a certain point, if they were winning, Mumbai fans would have something else to have a look at. I remember that season when KKR had Owen Morgan as their captain, and all the KKR fans were telling me that Owen Morgan was a terrible captain. Lads, he's just won a World Cup, right? Like, he's just revolutionized white ball cricket. You could tell me that KKR is losing, you could even tell me that he's not a great captain. But to say he's a bad captain, I think, would be an insane comment. But what did they see? Their team was playing terrible and he wasn't making any runs. Sometimes these things happen.
I'll tell you what, Sunny G is also pissed, and he's an unapologetic Mumbai fan, and he's not having any of it. He's not liking Pandya as captain, so that probably doesn't help either.
He's not captain as well. I mean, I think that is fair to say. There's remember when Rishabh Pant became captain a couple of years ago, and he kept getting the maths wrong on when he was using his bowlers. It's very rare you see a captain at that level miscount overs, right? Mm-hmm. Hardik Pandya has not done that, but he's got the batting lineup wrong three or four times. The bowling, it's really hard because they're not bowling very well, but he is making mistakes with the bowling as well and the way he's putting it together. The team looks fractured. The team had a captain that they liked. They don't really understand why they've had to do this. As I said, though, let's say they had won some of those games that they've been in front of and they're 4-2, no one would care about all this, mate. That is the truth. Yeah. When it comes to sports, when a team is losing, we worry about body language. We worry about captaincy. We worry about how much he's getting paid. We worry if they're winning. And if you want the best example of this in cricket, Brendan McCullum basically stuck the knife into Ross Taylor to get him out of the captaincy. And I don't think I've seen many cricket nations turn on their captain more than Brendan McCullum did. They weren't doing that by the end.
Definitely not. And on that note, let's call it a day on Uncovered. For those of you in the comments section, thank you so much for joining us. And if you like this video, give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this channel and Jared's other channel on YouTube.
The other video is up. So if you haven't had enough of me, well, Bayram's not on the other one, but in spirit, he's always there. But if you haven't had enough of me, the other video about how to almost make 300 an IPL game is now up on the main channel.
Yeah, and if you're ever confused where to find all of our content, whether it be written pieces, videos, or podcasts, go to goodareas.co and bookmark that website, because that is your one-stop shop for all the work that we do over here. And yeah, thanks for joining, guys. We'll see you next week for another episode of Uncovered. That is all for today. Goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.